is on page 161 in the Rosenfeld, 360 in the Art Scroll, 591 in the Koran, and this is one of a number of historical kinot which deals with tragedies which have nothing to do with Eretz Israel or the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash in any sense whatsoever. But look at the fact that Tisha B'Av is a day of commemoration for all Jewish tragedies which have happened over the course of the millennia. So we have a couple of earlier kinot which deal with the Crusades and the Kinah of Shali Shrufa Va'esh, which we looked at in some detail a couple of years ago, deals with the burning of the Talmud in Paris in June 1242, and the notion that the disputation with the church and the burning of the Talmud, the sources tell us that it was, some sources say it was 20 wagon loads of books, others say it was 24. I suggested at the time that it was, who knows how many it was, 20, 24. Why do they talk about 24 wagon loads? Because they're Kaftal and Sifrei Tanakh. That's their 24 books of the Tanakh, and essentially the message is that with the Talmud being burned in Paris, it was, you know, all of Jewish learning was being burned. In any case, I don't understand why Shali Shrufa Va'esh comes up where it does, because it's bang in the middle of the Tzionim. It's, we've got a Tzion in front of it and a Tzion behind it, and then bang in the middle we've got Shali Shrufa Va'esh. So it seems to be in the wrong place. It should, I would have thought, go better with the kinot to do with the Crusades. So if anybody ever comes across an answer, then all well and good. What I usually like to do when we look at the historical kinot, spend a little bit of time looking at a historical event which isn't necessarily commemorated in our classical kinot, but certainly should be spoken about on Tisha B'Av when we're remembering tragedies across the panorama of Jewish history. And today I want to talk a little bit about the Kishinev pogrom, which took place in Kishinev in Moldova in April 1903, so just under 120 years ago. This was a very significant event. It was the first of the pogroms, really, of the 20th century. One might have thought at the dawn of a new century that the notion of pogroms would be something of the past, but that's certainly not the case. And also it was a catalyst for further pogroms during the course of the first three decades of the 20th century, and also, as we'll see in a little bit, it was the catalyst for a new Zionist outlook in certain perspectives. So this pogrom took place in April 1903, and it's interesting from a number of perspectives. First of all, Kishinev at that time had just under 100,000 residents, and just under 50,000 of them were Jewish. I think 43 or 47% of the population was Jewish. That's very significant. That's more than Golders Green. And it's significant because when we talk about the pogrom, it means that everybody who was involved in the pogrom knew Jewish people. It's not like in some of the Nazi atrocities, you had people who, you know, never met a Jew before. Here, everybody involved in the pogrom had a Jewish neighbour, a Jewish person they worked with. We'll see in some of the accounts that woman, says she was attacked by somebody she used to babysit for. So the attackers were calling their victims by their names because they knew their victims, and that, you know, is a very traumatic thing. It took place over the Easter weekend, 1903, over the course of 3 days. 49 Jews were murdered, which is a significant number. So you've got here a picture, the bottom of you've got a map just to contextualise where Kishinev was or is. You've got a picture of the middle picture is of the desecrated Sifrei Torah being readied for burial. The bottom picture is of some of the victims. If you think about, you know, 49 victims having been murdered but in a pogrom, that's very very significant. Several hundred were injured. Lots of Jewish property was pillaged. And one of the perhaps most disturbing aspects was there was widespread rape of Jewish women during that pogrom. So that's one of the things. It's got an interesting question about what its relationship was with the blood libel. Immediately we hear that it was over the Easter weekend, so we'll assume there's some association perhaps with the blood libel, and there was. There, it seems that it wasn't a formal blood libel. I mean, it didn't start off with talk about a blood libel necessarily, but it was in the early stages. So, you know, once the Christians started attacking the Jews, and it seems that this was a premeditated attack, that was it was known in advance that they were planning on doing this. That's certainly the non-Jewish newspapers had given a hint of it, and people were coming into Kishinev for the intention of attacking Jews. And then in the early stages, so the rumours that went round were, attack is asking, why are we doing this? Oh, because somebody said they killed a Christian child. They need the blood for their festival. So it wasn't that it started from that, but that added fuel to the fire. There are some contemporary accounts of what happened. Interestingly, the Zionist poet Bialik was sent to Kishinev just a couple of weeks after the pogrom to take evidence about what happened and to write up a report. His report was written up as a poem, a lengthy poem called Ir HaHarega, the City of Slaughter, where he describes what he saw, lots of rabbinic references there to the Avar Rachamim prayer and to other phrases from Chazal and from Pesukim. Of course, Bialik had a very strong rabbinic background. Bialik had learnt in the Volozhin Yeshiva. So Bialik was the editor of the Sefer Haggadah, so he was very very familiar with religious literature. Looking at the opening, this is just the opening verse: "Get up and walk through the city of the massacre, and with your hands touch and lock your eyes on the cooled brain and clots of blood dried on tree trunks, rocks, and fences." And, you know, it's moving to me because this passage, again, this was written in 1903. It could have been written in 1943 in Poland, or it could have been written at the same time. Im Tochalna was written about the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. So again, we're seeing the fact that Jewish history keeps repeating itself. One of the big questions about the Kishinev pogrom is certainly from Bialik's perspective. Bialik was very critical of what he perceived as Jewish cowardice. He describes that Jewish men who should have been the descendants of the Maccabees, you know, just watched and, you know, hid whilst their women folk were pillaged, you know, not doing anything. There are different accounts of whether or not, you know, there was resistance or wasn't, but he was certainly very much opposed and very critical of the notion of Jews being led like sheep to the slaughter. And this was one of the precursors of the Haganah and the notion that Jews have to fight back. There's a book that came out a couple of years ago by Stephen J. Zipperstein called Pogrom, Kishinev and the Tilt of History, which I've drawn on. And he analyzes, but also brings some accounts, very moving account, which again shows how I've mentioned on a few occasions in the past about true stories that never happened, meaning that sometimes you have things where the historical details are a little bit murky or a little bit creative. It actually doesn't matter. Because even if it didn't happen in exactly this way, this essential thing happened. The lesson is still there. So he's got one here. Soon enough, the best known of all faces linked to the tragedy would be Moshe Kigel, described as the devout sexton of one of Lower Kishinev's numerous, mostly tiny synagogues. He was said to have lost his life in an effort to save the Torah scrolls of the beloved house of worship from desecration at the hands of hoodlums. Kegel's martyrdom would soon constitute the most enduring of all portraits from the pogrom. Indeed, arguably the most memorable of all moments of Jewish life in late imperial Russia. Portraits of Kegel would be reprinted widely. Prayers and poems devoted to him would be recited in synagogues, especially in the United States, and plays would be written in his honor. His martyrdom was made into medieval-like tale, particularly once Ephraim Moses Lilin produced his evocative poem to the martyrs of Kishinev. I couldn't find that anywhere online. Describing Kegel, wrapped in a traditional talit, wearing phylacteries, his arms outstretched in an effort to save the holy scrolls, his body enveloped by angelic wings. This could have been from the Shoah, it could have been from the Crusades, it could have been from the Churban HaBayit. Kegel, bearded, aged 60 and pious, residing in a building around the corner from the synagogue, whose Torah scrolls had been desecrated. Contrary to the later accounts, however, he was murdered right outside the door of his home, not in front of the house of worship. He was not a synagogue sexton. He owned a tiny shop adjacent to the synagogue, and there's no evidence that he attempted to protect its sacred objects. Nevertheless, once his body was found near shredded scrolls on the street, stories of his martyrdom quickly coalesced. So it's a modern midrash. It didn't actually happen like that, but it doesn't necessarily matter whether it happens like that or didn't happen like that, because the message of the story is true. We've got photographic evidence there of the desecrated Sifrei Torah being readied for burial. Does it matter whether somebody fought to protect them or didn't fight to protect them? I don't know if it matters. Looking at some of the accounts, so this was on the first day of the pogrom, page 25. By 4 or 5 p.m. as the afternoon yielded to evening, cries of death to the Jews and strike the Jews could be heard. Buildings with large number of Jews, much of Kishinev's housing had Jews and non-Jews living side by side, were surrounded and pelted with rocks. On the whole, these buildings were attacked for no more than 10 or 15 minutes, the crowds then moving on to other targets. On rare occasions, the mob stayed for hours until outer doors were smashed and the building overrun. Jewish doctors seeking to respond to the needs of wounded Jews found themselves able to reach them only if they wore crosses. Christians scored crosses on the windows of their homes to protect themselves from attack. When Jews tried to do the same, it rarely worked. One more indication is it was widely believed that rioters had been alerted in advance to where Jews were lived. So this wasn't spur of the moment, this was planned. Jews managed to pass themselves as off as Gentiles, were told that permission had been granted to attack Jews for the next few days because they drink our blood. So that's blood libel. A Jewish saloon owner who watched as his inventory was subsumed by rioters or poured on the street overheard the mob toasting Kushevin's health. A slab of meat found cooking in a shop owner's home adjacent to his wrecked store was waved over the head of rioters with the announcement that it was the remains of a Christian child. The wife of the Jewish shopkeeper, Yudel Fishelman, whose building was broken into, managed to escape with her child in her arms, but she dropped the newborn as she fled to the train station, the baby crushed to death. So, you know, as I've said, it's just history repeating itself time and time again. And then if you turn over, it's page 26. Some Jews were hit over the heads with tables as many as 20 times until they died. Hannah Brummerman saved her own life, escaping with little more than a mild beating when she handed over 300 rubles she had earned selling wood before Pesach. Fleeing to her daughter's house nearby, which was also under attack, she had to barter once again for her life, handing over the 3 rubles that was all the money she had left. In his notes, David described one Jewish victim caught up in Monday's violence. Mayor Weissman, 3 children and a wife, his eyes gouged out. He wanted them to kill him, saw him in his bed. Fine type of poor man, had a small grocery store. Wine seller Yisrael Chaim Steinberg watched helplessly as a mob of 50 confronted his 70-year-old father demanding money. The terrified man found himself unable to utter more than a few stray sentences. The crowd responded in quasi-Yiddish, Gibbergeld. When it was found that he had only half a kopeck in his pocket, he was beaten to death. As the son told Bialik, who spent much of his 5 weeks in Kishinev interviewing victims, "We were hiding the entire time watching all this, hiding behind a fence. Four at the same time were hiding in the outhouse." And then warnings abounded, at least as recalled once the massacre ended, of greater violence the next day. A Gentile gatekeeper for a building near the New Market mockingly asked Jewish residents when he appeared for work, "What's happening here?" He added, as he locked the courtyard for the night, that it was well known that permission had been granted for 3 days of violence. Attacks on women that night were ferocious. In an apartment near the New Market on Nikolovsky Street, one of the city's major boulevards, a woman was raped repeatedly for 4 consecutive hours by members of a mob that included seminarians, according to David. At the same place, another woman who beseeched police to stop this attack was told that Jews were getting just what they were deserved. And I read further on, or somewhere else, an account of a woman who was raped 7 times by a group of people. So history doesn't occur only once, it repeats itself. Let's continue with Charlie Srufavaish.